Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I am talking because of Georgia fans. I am talking to every fan base everywhere. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. How are you? 1 week from today, right now, as I speak, going to be in Hoover, Alabama, South Birmingham, at the Hyatt Winfrey, and we'll have coaches and players and media analysts and you name it, and we'll be there, and that's in 7 days. In 7 days plus a couple, Dan will be live from Charlotte for ACC Media Days, which means I'll be live from Charlotte for some of those interviews as well. So it's an overlap sort of thing up yonder, which has surprised me to no end, but that's what's coming ahead. I just said that I am talking today, this first subject, because of Georgia fans. But I'm talking to every fan base. But the current day example, yep, UGA Bulldogs. I don't believe any fan anywhere should ever whisper, we better win a national championship this year. I really don't think that that's what a fan of any program should ever say. I brought this up a little bit last week, and it just kind of breezed past it. And I remember mentioning Alabama and its fan, even the expectations of the Alabama fan base. I thought, wait a minute, it's not even realistic for them. No matter who you are. And Alabama fans this year, see, they don't actually say, we better win a national championship. It's to the point where, well, yeah, you know that's what I think. I don't have to say it. Oh, we're good enough to win a national champion, but you've won so many. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying here. You have won enough national championships or so many, or you've reached the threshold where in a season where you don't, it still stinks to high heaven times 10. But you're okay. Can't win it every year. In an era where Bama is kind of, by and large, winning it every year. Or playing for it, or in the running, or 1 year where they didn't make the playoffs. Oh, clutch the pearls. Even Alabama's fan base doesn't say, we better win a national championship this year. Now, it's easier for them to say that because they've got the shirts with all the years and everything on it. But Georgia fans? I can't imagine that there is anyone enrolled at any level at the University of Georgia who was in school at any point last time they won a national championship. That was 1980. Now, I think it was the 2000, whatever year they played Colorado in Athens when they brought Ralphie. It was actually Ralphette. It was a girl, Buffalo. But when they brought Ralphie, that year, my good friend Brandon Adams, Dog Nation, Brandon Adams told me, he was like, hey, I was at the game Saturday. I think they threw another national championship year up there. Dan, does Georgia claim 41 or 42?
I believe it's 42.
Okay. Take your time. It's not urgent. See if you can identify sometime around like 2006 when maybe they changed the designation or so. But Brandon was like, I'm pretty sure I was here like last season and it said just 1980. But then they threw 42 up there. So maybe you weren't a student, but were you even alive? Dan, what year were you born?
1985.
Dan was not alive for the last Georgia National Championship. So let's just say it's different than an Alabama fan. The reason I say I don't believe any fan base anywhere should ever even whisper, we better win a national championship this year. Now, initially, I always want to respond with, or what? Because it's rare that a coach gets fired specifically for not winning a national title. Now, Mark Richt eventually got there, but it wasn't he didn't win a national championship. It's what did you do down in Jacksonville? Why did you start Fatone Bowden, and then you left him in the second half as well? Like, it was enough of enough. That's what it was. So it's different. I get it. You would have to be to have any, because I'm thinking of, I was an oddball. And I've told you that when I was five, I remember watching Ohio State, Michigan. Folks, I can remember being 8 years old. And this is clearly, I remember being 8 years old and I was watching Super Bowl IX. It was Minnesota and Pittsburgh. And it was at, I believe it was at Tulane Stadium, the old Tulane Stadium, I think. And it may be, up to that point, it was the only Super Bowl where one team didn't score a touchdown. So, I mean, Minnesota, they had no chance. So I remember being 8 years old, and I looked at my dad, and I said, that team can't win. They can't even get back where they started. Now, I was talking about the line of scrimmage. So even if you're like the oddball like me, and as an 8 year old, you're already watching line of scrimmage play. Because if you translate it, like whoever was doing color on the broadcast, what he was saying was, yeah, Minnesota, they're being overwhelmed by the Steelers front seven and they can't even get back to the line of scrimmage. 8 year old Chuck was sitting in where? Lawrenceville, Georgia, pointing at the screen going, yeah, they can't win today. So if you were as oddball as me and you were really paying attention as like a 7 or an 8 year old, folks, you've got to be close to 50 to have any actual remembrances of Georgia winning a national championship. So I get it. We got to win one this year. Folks, it is insane what you have to do. And that's been every year. But in the playoff era, see, here's the biggest difference since the playoff era started. And the two-team playoff with Florida State and Tennessee, that started in 98. The four-team playoff started, damn, was that 14?
Yes, 14 was the first year.
Four-team playoff started in 14. The, I guess, 12-team playoff starting soon. But before there were playoffs, do you know the biggest difference in winning a national championship then versus any time since 1998 forward? Since the playoff era started, no one does your dirty work for you. There at least used to be a chance because of conference tie-ins to the Orange, Rose, and Sugar. And the fact that the Fiesta had no tie-ins. They could take two independents if they wanted. The bowl arrangements used to be 100% a cash grab. That meant that you would have 1, 2, 3, and 4 all playing in different bowls as a fairly regular. Imagine that, folks. 1, 2, 3, and 4. You've got like 18 bowl games. The top four teams, none of them play each other in a bowl. Not one matchup. Which meant a team like BYU could lay in the weeds all season, show up in the Holiday Bowl versus a 6-6 Michigan team and walk off with a national championship. And it's been so long ago that that could happen. I'm talking like 1984 there. Okay? BYU, pre-playoffs. You could kind of hang out, stay under the radar all season, and then show up in San Diego for the Holiday Bowl for a national championship. That was 1984. Do you know what else 1984 was? There were 11 football conferences. Four of them don't exist anymore. The Gator Bowl matched number 7 versus number 9. The defense couldn't advance a fumble in college football. All right, think about that for a minute. That's how long ago this was that there could be a, quote, easy path to the national championship. When you say something, no matter how talented you are, how veteran, how experienced, how well coached, blah, 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 no matter what you say, we better win a national championship this year. that means there needs to be some sort of easing of the route to the national championship. And I'm trying to find the, quote, easy opponent in the national championship since the playoff era started. Like the team that knocked off the other Godzilla. Whoo, we know what we're heading for. Alabama and Ohio State. Oops. Hey, look, Cinderella knocked off Alabama. That hadn't happened. Has not. Michigan State did not win. Notre Dame did not win. Cincinnati didn't get to play. There is no example in the playoff era where somebody else does your dirty work for you, where they lessen the load, they make it a little bit easier so that you get to play Butler in the national championship instead of, I don't know, North Carolina or Duke. It hasn't happened in football. It happens in basketball. Who are we playing for in the College World Series? Coastal Carolina? Really? All right. Now, Chanticleer's went on to win the College World Series, I think, in 16 or 17. But that's an example. There's examples in every other sport where somebody does the dirty work and then the monster gets to play the overwhelmed opponent, not in a semi, not in a quarter, not in the regular season, for a championship. Because somebody else screwed up and didn't take George Mason seriously. In football, it never happens. Ever. Which means no fan base can say, hey, we better win a national championship this year.
Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
As a kid, this is just something that you don't think about, just something like this happening. I mean, it's a blessing. Would none of this be possible without God. To everybody that supported me, thank you. It means a lot. And just everybody that's watched me along this journey, just thank you, and I'm glad to be here.
I won't say hero, that's the wrong word, but kid that I really am inspired by. And that's kind of cool when a grown man looks at a kid and says, wow, you inspire me. That's Devonta Smith talking at the ESPYs. And it's, you know, similar back in December when he got to Heisman. It was December, wasn't it? I know they had moved it back, but yeah, it was December. So when he got the Heisman, same thing. Like, been doubted my whole life, and I just keep on producing. So I appreciate everybody who's been in my corner. Just a really, really likable kid, and I'm glad that he's gotten a lot of the recognition that he has. So, again, Devonta Smith moving on to the NFL and taking a bunch of hardware with him. It is Chuck Oliver Show continuing on a Monday, full day today. And as we go through the program, I'm going to start kind of getting into I do it every year, a real comprehensive preview of what we're going to be doing next week. With my one questions, with the how am I wrong about, I do all of my individual team previews, and I've got it's nerded, I mean, to the hilt. And I inadvertently came up with like a 20-point measuring system for every team. And because of the portal, I'm changing it a little bit, but whatever. It's 20 points, and I come up with my own ratings, and then I kind of put it aside for a while, at least, you know, a few days for each team. I'll then come back after I've moved on two or three other teams, maybe in other conferences. And I'll come back and I'll pull out, for instance, Arkansas State Red Wolves. All right, how am I wrong about this? Now, it's Arkansas State, but also to do Ohio State. I do Clemson, but you also have to do, you know, Texas State. So I've got how am I going to be wrong about what I think about all these teams. I've got my one question for each coach, which thankfully that's only actually come into play one time. You got to be prepared for it, but only one time I ever had just one question. So we've got a big preview about, like I said, all the coaches and everybody that you're going to be hearing from
Charlotte and Birmingham next week when we're out at SEC and ACC Media Days. Dan, how are you doing today?
Yeah, it's going to be a busy but great week next week. So looking forward to that. As you've told the listeners, I'll remind them, you're going to be in Hoover. I will be in Charlotte. We will have it wall-to-wall, both major conferences in the southeastern part of the country coming your way. Chuck, interesting enough, our good buddy Chris Gordy, who we've had on this program numerous times, says he recently had another good buddy of ours, Phil Steele, on. And Phil was asked about Ole Miss. And Ole Miss, I think, is a curious case this season. And I've got to kind of disagree with Phil a little bit because he talked about the defense and if it can improve, then they've got a, quote, puncher's chance in every single game. Chuck, are we kind of aware of how small a puncher's chance they have in this season with that last caveat that he said right there? Because I don't know if people realize how bad that Ole Miss defense was last season. There are 127 teams in FBS college football. Ole Miss was 126th. In total defense last season. That's almost unheard of for a program like Ole Miss, who has never been known as a defensive stalwart, but it's still one of those things that you say, yeah, hey, a puncher's chance if that happens. So let me just go ahead and even throw this even further. So 126 right there, I even cut that in half. I'm not necessarily a math major, but that is, what, 63, ish. I think it is? Yeah, ish. So there you go. So 63 right there. If they were to get inside 63 or around 63, I think most people could look at a defensive coordinator and say, that is a hell of an accomplishment that you did to turn that team around from what they were a season ago. Nobody can disagree with the ability that Matt Corral has, or also to the offensive line, which is pretty solid for them. And I know that you lose some key players, at least at the skill position spots, but Lane Kiffin is also known as being a guy who can identify and create in that part of his offense. I have no doubts that there will be people who can step up there. But again, it comes back to that defense that, like I said, that is the mountain that you have to climb in order to be able to be to that point. Because even if you're 63rd, that's not beating Alabama. That's probably not beating Texas A&M. We'll have to see who the starting quarterback is, LSU, and even other programs that are going to be on your schedule as well. A lot of people are thinking 9-3, 8-4. Kind of like what I said about A&M, Chuck, in terms of believing them as being a major competitor this season for the college football playoff and beyond. I said, yeah, you got to show me a quarterback, and you got to show me a quarterback that performs. It's the same with that defense. You got to show me a defense that at least is capable.
9 wins, maybe even 8. I mean, that's pretty high cotton. I don't know what to attribute last season to as far as how just flat out hard they were on defense. Now, if you go back a couple of seasons ago, I thought they actually had improved again. There's all kinds of context for what happened, whether it was COVID, no spring, new coaches and no spring. Just we played a bunch of young kids. Just there's 15 different reasons that it could be the case. But you're talking about an Ole Miss team that as recently as just, you know, 3-4 years ago, remember Landshark defense, man, we're proud of this thing over here. And big time players, first round draft picks coming off the board. Even guys like, who was it, Tony Connor, that safety that could never stay healthy after a couple of years. He would have been, an absolute just baller in the NFL if he had been able to get there. So you go from that to where they are now, and a little bit of improvement can make a huge change.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on Chuck Oliver Show and across so many different formats. 9 states, 51 sticks, talking on terrestrial radio. Of course, you got Twitch TV off of LandryFootball.com, and you've got ThePodcastPark.com. And I am thinking that my next guest and I, we may actually be colleagues right now. I want to welcome on now a good friend of the program, good friend of mine. I want to say hello to Neil McCready, covers Ole Miss and has for years. Neil, how are you doing today?
Chuck, I'm good. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well. Tell everybody about the new venture, the new avenue, the new spoke off the hub.
Yeah, so Chris Landry is based in Baton Rouge, and I've been doing a show called SEC Football and Beyond, I guess for about a year now, Chuck. We've been taping it on Tuesdays and Friday mornings. We're going to start taping on Monday and Thursday late afternoons. It'll be available in podcast form early Tuesday, early Friday. For people who have watched us in the past on YouTube or on Twitch, you'll still be able to do that, as almost as if nothing has changed. And through you guys there, we're going to hopefully be able to enhance the show and make the show better. And it'll be an addition for the people who listen to your fine program. It'll be yet another college football, college athletics-oriented show that I think they'll enjoy.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, and you're being pretty nice about it. Neil covers, deep dive college football, especially Ole Miss, the SEC West, the conference, et cetera. So it's always going to be great content with he and Chris, no doubt about that, and that is twice a week. So it's really high-quality stuff, folks. Let's talk about the next big event, which I think begins a week from today. That's SEC Media Days. Has Lane or the school announced the players they're bringing? Because I think it's only two this year. Actually, not three.
If they have, I'm not aware of it, so I don't think that they have. I've certainly not seen anything from them. I'd be surprised if it's not Matt Corral, and I would guess either Jerrion Ealy or Momo Sanogo would be my guess. It would be something along those lines, but they'll bring Matt, I'm sure, and he's going to be the one that most people are going to want to talk to. And you know, it's always interesting to see what schools do, because if you're going to bring the two guys that people want to talk to, you'll bring Corral and Ealy and call it a day. Two guys that have first-round NFL draft possibilities and two guys that had explosive seasons a year ago under Lane Kiffin and figure to be, if you're talking about guys around the SEC who could be impactful, that they're certainly in the conversation.
And let's talk something. You and I mentioned a little bit about this last time, and then I think we started talking about Jeff Lebby. But Matt Corral, this was just him still being in Oxford. It was one of the possibilities, but it wouldn't have been towards the top of my list. I mean, you're talking about a kid from California, wants to throw the ball, John Rhys Plumlee, new coach, blah, all of this stuff. There were five ways he was supposed to leave the program a year ago, and now it turns into, well, he could be first-team All-SEC, he could be an All-American, he could have a chair in New York, he could be a first-round pick. How did it turn out this way when there were so many other more likely possibilities, at least in my mind?
Well, Chuck, what happened was Elijah Moore caught a touchdown pass, and he had a celebration in the end zone. And that celebration led to a 15-yard penalty, which led to a missed extra point from 35 yards out, which led to Matt Luke getting fired, which led to Lane Kiffin getting the job, which led to Lane Kiffin saying, I'm not hostage to anything that's been done here before. I'm going to play the best quarterback, and that was Matt Corral. If you take any of those chain of events out, I believe Matt Corral is the quarterback at Oregon or someplace out west. I don't say Oregon by accident. I know Matt would probably very diplomatically say, no, I was staying. And I certainly don't want to question Matt's integrity at all, because I think he would say that, you know, out of just kind of a sense of, hey, this is the least controversial thing I could say. But I firmly believe and that Matt was going to leave had there not been a coaching change. And you know, if Matt Luke had been given another year at Ole Miss, they would have gone to Plumlee at quarterback. And, you know, then the pandemic hits, and I don't think Ole Miss would have been able to fire Matt Luke during a pandemic. And I think we'd still be talking about this program that had, at that point, I'm not sure how much juice it would have. I'm not sure how much fan excitement it would have. I don't think it would be all that relevant nationally, if I'm honest. And
Tennessee could have hired Lane Kiffin again.
It's great. Yeah, Tennessee could have hired Lane Kiffin and may very well have hired Lane Kiffin again had he stayed another year at FAU. Or Lane Kiffin might be the head coach at Arkansas right now. You know, Arkansas was not all the way down that path, but they were certainly well past the tire-kicking phase of it. It's amazing what that one penalty did. And then in many ways, this is maybe the craziest part about it, I mean, the long-winded answer, if that penalty doesn't happen, Elijah Moore doesn't have the season last season that he had, and I don't know that Elijah goes as quickly as he did in the NFL draft. I think he was the second pick of the second round, and he landed in a great situation with the Jets. And it's the fallout from that one moment in Starkville that night is simply remarkable.
Okay, now I go back to what makes Matt Corral's game what it is, because we'll talk about the passing in a minute. But I mean, you go for 500 yards in a short season against an all SEC, you know, conference schedule. That's not nothing. That's not just, well, I think I'll escape the pocket. Talk about him getting across the line of scrimmage.
Well, first of all, he's very athletic. He's very smart. He's got an NFL arm. He can make every throw. He can make the deep throw. I saw where someone questioned his deep throw ability, and I thought, man, have you not watched? I mean, he might have thrown the best deep ball in the league a year ago.
Oh, that's what's in the play sheet line.
Yeah, I mean, he can absolutely throw the deep ball. He can throw the hard out. He's very athletic with his feet. He can extend plays. He can punish you as a runner. The flaw in his game, and it popped up a couple of times last season, is like a lot of quarterbacks with big arms, he can get stubborn. He can make bad decisions. He can try to force balls. And then I think sometimes with Matt, one interception will lead to two, and two will lead to three, and then, you know, the rest. That's always kind of been his Achilles heel, I think, is he'll make one bad decision, and he thinks about it so much that he makes another, and he has maybe too much memory out there. But I thought they did a much better job last season. There were a couple of moments last season that I thought were really pivotal for Matt, and one came – and he had thrown the 6-interception game in a loss at Arkansas, mm-hmm. and then threw a pick on the first drive in the end zone against Auburn, and kind of had a critical moment, you know, where they took him out for a drive just to let him calm down. And then he came in and I thought played a really good game the rest of the way against Auburn. And then the first half of the LSU game in Baton Rouge went badly from a turnover standpoint. And I thought they kind of got their play calling back in order and got him going again. And he was terrific in the second half of a what led to ended up being a high scoring loss. But you know, he's a guy, Chuck, that the ceiling on him is really high. I mean, if you told me he's the second quarterback taken in the draft in April, I'm not surprised. Now he's got to cut those mistakes out, and they've got to find a weapon to replace Elijah Moore. And it's going to be a handful of people. It won't be just one person, but, listen, he can do a lot. It just got over for whatever reason. Rich Rodriguez and he never got on the same page. And there's a lot to that story going back to that season that we could talk about it probably when you have more time. But it very, very close to got away from him. But he's always been the best quarterback on that campus. He was a kid that was offered by USC initially. Dan Mullen recruited him to Florida. Things kind of fell apart there. But no one's ever questioned his talent. He's got real, real quarterbacking talent. There's not much he can't do back there.
You know, Neil, I don't know if you're going to remember this because you obviously, you know, had covered Ole Miss specifically, you know, if we go back a few years. But if you happen to watch that Oklahoma-Tennessee game, Baker Mayfield, I think, literally was one more incompletion away from getting yanked for Trevor Knight. And you talk about what begets what. I talk about that all the time. In college football and sports, you have no idea what one decision 15 minutes or days or years later the outcome is. But it literally could be one incompletion, one turnover, one whatever. Baker Mayfield loses his job, and you've got a different first overall pick in the draft. So I don't think you're overstating what you did about Elijah Moore in the Egg Bowl at all.
No, if anything, I'm probably understating it. It was. I really do believe that if that play doesn't, if let's just for kicks and giggles, right? Let's say that he doesn't do that. There is no penalty, and even let's just make it a missed extra point. Luke Logan misses a regular extra point, and Ole Miss loses by the exact same score in the exact same way. Or maybe he makes it and they lose in overtime. I don't believe Matt Luke gets fired, and I believe Matt Corral leaves. I believe that. I would bet a lot of money on it.
Yeah, like I said, there's like eight ways it would turn out not for Ole Miss, and then this one way. Rack them up again. Talking with Neil McCready, who you can get LandryFootball.com. You can get ThePodcastPark.com as well. Again, twice a week, he and Chris talking SEC football. Flip it over to the defense, and we were talking before you came on, and I know that you and I have discussed this as well. You don't need to be great. You just need to be better. And, I mean, there's a whole lot of blue sky as far as the Rebels being better on defense. What do you – give me a corner they're going to fight out of. Either is it pass rush? Is it lockdown corners? Is it good tacklers at linebacker? I mean, everybody does something well.
Yeah, I think they're going to be better at everything. Again, it's that how much better, because a year ago they were just awful. I mean, that's not being critical either.
No.
They were just awful on defense. They were atrocious on defense. So I do think they're going to be better across the board. They're bigger up front. They've got a little bit more depth up front. They added a grad transfer linebacker in Chance Campbell from Maryland, who I think is going to shore up their linebacker play a lot. They've also had a couple of young guys. Austin Keys comes to mind, who I think has begun to emerge as a guy who's ready to make plays at the SEC level. I think they're going to be a little bit deeper at linebacker. I think they're going to be a little steadier at linebacker. I don't think they're going to be great there, but I think they're going to be okay. And then where they have a chance to be significantly different is in the back end. They added a lot of bodies, a lot of speed, a lot of length. They've got some depth. I think they're going to be more impactful back there. If you told me that there's an area where they are dramatically better in 2021 than they were in 2020, I would say it's the secondary. It'll be pass coverage. It'll be some ability to come up and stop the run a little bit with safeties and that kind of thing. Here's the thing. I mean, a year ago, they were – I don't know where they ranked nationally. It was 100 and something. It was awful. If they got into the 40s, you know, if they finish as the 48th best defense in the country, what does that mean from a win-loss standpoint? Does it mean that, you know, that game against LSU becomes a win? That game against Auburn becomes a win? Maybe the game at Arkansas becomes a win? And you look up and you won 8 out of 10 games. I think that's possible. Now, on the other side, you know, again, it gets glossed over a little, but Elijah Moore and Kenny Yeboah were huge parts of that offense a year ago, and they're gone. And so other people have to step up, and I think the assumption with Corral and Kiffin and Levy and Ely, who I think can play in the slot some and be impactful, I think the assumption is they're going to be really good on offense again, because Lane Kiffin offenses are typically really good, and especially when you have a good quarterback, and we talked about Corral. So, look, I think I wrote about this a little bit yesterday. I think Ole Miss is one of those kind of fun teams where there's real variance. If you look at their schedule, and, you know, if you, like me, you believe that college football is an emotional game, it's a momentum game. If you look at their schedule, they could be 5-1 in mid-October when LSU comes here and Ole Miss retires Eli Manning's jersey and the place is, you know, bonkers. And they pull that off, and then all of a sudden, well, you're, you know, kind of cooking with gas. So, I mean, if you told me that Ole Miss was a team that went into the second half of the season as a team contending for 9 or 10 wins, I'd buy it. Now, the flip side of that is there are – multiple games on that schedule, Auburn, LSU, maybe even Louisville. Some people think Liberty, Mississippi State. There's some games on that schedule that if they're not significantly better on defense are going to be shootouts and toss-ups. And so they could – Ole Miss is a team that could wind up losing 6 games. You know, so there's just a lot of variance there. They were must-watch television a year ago, and I think they'll be must-watch television again this year.
I thought it was awesome for Ole Miss. I mean, if the only recruiting you could do, we talked about it, you know, if you could only recruit on TV, well, make it fun, man. Neil, good stuff as always, brother. Look forward to it again, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.
All right, Neil McCready again. You can get him at thepodcastpark.com. Again, he and Chris Landry talking SEC football twice a week. Yeah, that was the 2016 game, probably. Baker Mayfield, or 15, what, 15? 15. Baker in Tennessee, where I'm telling you, He was, the TV kept going to the sidelines. He was one more mistake. Failed drive, incomplete pass, certainly a turnover. And Bob Stoops said afterward, oh, never thought about yanking him. Yes, you did. And I mean, it's sliding doors. It absolutely is. And when you look at just the way that Ole Miss lost the Egg Bowl, then it gives you that last little grain of justification you need to drop on it. All right, we're going to fire Matt Luke and move on. And there were some folks involved and also disaffected, both sides of it, who looked at it and went, really, you're firing him? Because kid peed on a pylon? Because if he doesn't, you think, well, we kicked the extra point, we go to overtime, got a chance to win, et cetera, all of that. But what Neil said, exactly right. That's a concept we talk about all the time, that it is impossible to see what that next even, that very next link in the chain is, much less 8, 9, 10 down the row. So appreciate Neil's time. We will break, wrap up hour one next.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
When we talk about possible week one upsets, most of us aren't very adventurous. I'm going to bet a long shot in the Derby. Really? Who you betting? 4-1. Oh, it's not a long shot. When we look at week one bear traps, oh, somebody going to get upset. I think Clemson beats Georgia. What is Georgia? Is Georgia's favorite, I assume, right now? No, 2.5, 3.5, 4, but it's a tight game. There is no monster upset available. Miami over Alabama? Okay, that's a much more monster upset. And that's the kind of thing most people don't even want to talk about. They don't want to get that adventurous. Well, that can't happen. Now, it could, but that can't happen. So I'm going to go back to my big upset as a 3.5-point dog will win. I'm going to give you one, a game, a matchup. It's just kind of sitting over there on the side, waving at everybody, getting no attention. Week one, if you peruse the college football schedule, you will see Saturday, September 4th, high noon, Oklahoma at Tulane. No, Chuck, that's Oklahoma. Okay, yeah, at Tulane, but not at Tulane. It's Oklahoma at Tulane at the Superdome. No, it's not. Now, I'm just going to talk about this matchup, first of all. First game of the season, you know, you need some sort of equalizer. And the first game of the season, it's as good a time as any for an upset-minded opponent to get that dub. It's not nearly as attainable in November when the heavy favorite, they've had injuries, their roster's been depleted, and now their second-teamers and even that one-third-teamer who's in the starting lineup, all of them are better than anybody you've recruited in the last 4 years because they play at Oklahoma. Well, I'm a backup at Oklahoma. Yeah, and you're better than the starter at Tulane in a lot of cases. So as you get deeper into the season, attrition, injuries, whatever, we know how it works, folks. So early in the season's better. Well, this is as early in the season as it gets. It's week one. Plus, you know what Willie Fritz likes to do? He runs the ball. He kind of mucks it up a little bit on the lines of scrimmage. They're better on defense than people are going to expect. And, I mean, even against a big-time opponent, as far as, like, getting in after the quarterback, tackles for loss, et cetera, there are big plays they make. And they're going to give up big plays, too. There are big plays they make defensively. So am I telling you, Tulane, woo, watch out. Here comes a green wave. No. Here come the Sooners. At Tulane, as in literally at Yulman Stadium. And I think that's part of it. You run the ball and you play defense and can make some plays on that side of the ball. That's a good start. Do you know how much cash Tulane is passing up by not moving this to the Superdome? Yulman Stadium sits 30,000 seats. Superdome, 65,000. Now, money at Tulane, not as big a deal as some other places, but everybody in college athletics could use that extra kick. Plus, if they moved it down the street to the Superdome, they would sell the additional 35,000 seats. But they're not going to do it because at that point, it becomes an Oklahoma neutral site game, not a Tulane home game. And I was texting a buddy over there, as Graf, who used to do the game, did the games for 20 years, 20 plus years. Biggest game since the opener of Yulman Stadium since 2018. They have sold out the entire season of season tickets because of Oklahoma. And I know that there are OU fans who have bought. That happens all the time. Clemson fan will buy a Georgia Tech season ticket. Georgia fan will buy a Georgia Tech season ticket just so they get the game. That happens sometimes. That's also how you move that meter. You had a 16% chance of winning. You make it 17.7. That's how you do it. You don't move the game from Cincinnati to Paul Brown Stadium. You don't move it from Tulane to the Superdome. You keep it on campus, sacrifice the cash, hopefully get a win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.